हरिः ॐ सहनाववतु सहनौ भुनक्तु सह वीर्यं करवावहै तेजस्विनावधीतमस्तु मा विद्विषावहै ॐ शान्ति शान्ति शान्तिः ॐ जय श्री कृष्ण चैतन्य प्रभु नित्यानन्द श्री अद्वैत गदाधर श्रीवासादि गौर भक्तवृन्द हरे कृष्ण 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 हरे 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 राम 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 हरे हरे
Bhakti Sandarbha, Adhyayana 1, Adhikarana 1, Description of the Bhakti Yoga Process, page 26. Someone may claim, "Oh, I am a philosopher and I am doing my duty." But do you know God and do you serve God? Yes, I know God. I am God. Such nonsense will not help you. Suppose an ordinary man claims, "I am the President of the United States." Everyone will understand he is a crazy fellow. Similarly, when a rascal says, "I am God," we should understand he is crazy. You know, very simple. You have to satisfy the Supreme Lord with your service, not try to imitate him. In the Bhagavad Gita, Krishna never advises that you should claim to be him. No, he says, "Sarva dharmam parityaja mam ekam sharanam vraja." Bhagavad Gita 18:66. Come under my shelter exclusively. He never says, "Become equal with me." That is nonsense. Krishna will be satisfied with you when you surrender to him and try to serve him, not when you falsely claim, "I am Krishna," or "Krishna is now dead and I have become God," or "There is no God." Such rascaldom will never satisfy Krishna. So the instruction of the Bhagavatam is Svanushtitasya dharmasya samsiddhir haritoshanam. Your perfection will come when you perform your duties nicely for the satisfaction of Hari or Krishna. The activities in the four social and four spiritual orders of the Varnashram system may sometimes appear material, but when they are performed for the satisfaction of Krishna, they are no longer material, they are spiritual. Material simply means forgetfulness of Krishna. That's all. Otherwise, there is nothing material. Those who are not thoroughly Krishna conscious distinguish between material and spiritual. But when you are fully Krishna conscious, you see the oneness of everything. Ekatvam anu pashyata pashyataha. Ishupanishad 7. This means that you now, this is that you see how everything is related to Krishna. So to overcome our forgetfulness of Krishna, to overcome our forgetfulness of Krishna, we should make satisfying him our only business. Some sit here, Haritoshanam, Srimad Bhagavatam 1.2.13. And if your aim is simply to satisfy Krishna, then your life is perfect. Chapter 9, Dharma, the Way of Transcendence. So here the Prabhupada is bringing out the point that seeing that everything is Krishna, everything's coming from Krishna, everything's connected to Krishna. So when it's seen in its proper context and used in the service of Krishna, it's not material. Material means where there's forgetfulness of Krishna. That's the definition. It's not that it's a place, it's where one's forgetfulness of Krishna. Right? Somebody says, that's how you can be forgetful of Krishna on the spiritual platform, in the spiritual realm. And then one will be transferred here, because this is the place where everyone is. So we call it the material world, because basically speaking, everyone here is forgetful of Krishna. But if everyone's remembering Krishna, it's the spiritual world. It may be a temporary, it may be manifest from the temporary energy of Krishna, but it's still Krishna's energy, it's still Brahman. It's just that it'll be a one that doesn't have the eternal I mean manifestation that you have in the spiritual world. So it's a subtle thing there. So if you're doing your duties in connection with Krishna, they're spiritual. Because someone says it may appear material, but that's for the materialist. For the devotee, they're doing things for Krishna, they're spiritual. You don't make the difference. You know, just like someone's cooking, you don't make the difference between the cooking and the use of the kitchen utensils. Right? But there is a difference. But when you apply it, you don't need to make that difference. Right? So the same way as if it's used for Krishna, then it will be seen in that transcendental position. So that's the point. It's not that over transcendental we don't use it. No, we're transcendental, everything's for Krishna. Because if you say we're transcendental, we don't use it. Okay, so what are you engaging in Krishna service? You know, is your body, mind, and words engaged in Krishna service? If it is, then that's good. But if not, it's not that I don't use varnashram, therefore I'm spiritual. So that's not a definition anywhere. I'm a devotee, so I don't use varnashram. That makes me spiritual. No, you're spiritual because you're engaged in Krishna's service, and you're always going to engage something. The body is made out of material energy. The mind, the intelligence, is made out of material energy. Use them in Krishna's service, you'll say, you know, like that. Because otherwise you say, oh, I'm a devotee, we don't need that. Okay, who's the devotee? Because your body is not the devotee. Your mind, your intelligence is not the devotee. Your polluted consciousness is not the devotee. You know, your senses, so 24 elements are not the devotee. The devotee is the soul. You know. So therefore, we're going to take it that, you know, I'm the devotee, me, my body. You know, and so I don't have to do varnashram. So what's the difference? You don't engage your body in Krishna's service, you're in Maya just as much as if you're not engaging varnashram in Krishna's service. Right? In fact, if you're doing varnashram, it's probably more pious.
Means
the point is you have to be, it's just like this. If you go into the kitchen and you can't distinguish, you say, I see all kitchen utensils equally. Right? Have you ever tried to cut a potato or peel a potato with a colander? You know, or with a frying pan? I guess if you put the potato under the water and rubbed it with the back of the pan enough, you might get some of the skin off. Means you don't tell the difference, means you see everything in connection with Krishna. But the point is they can tell the difference because they're differentiating the living entity from the body, from the surroundings, and in that environment they're dealing. So if they deal with them in that straight way, it's Krishna conscious. But how they reciprocate is how they'll deal with them back. But if we say, if the Mahabhagavata is saying we don't make the distinction, that's one thing. But at the same time, as we also hear the Mahabhagavats take the position of the Madhumas to preach. Because as a Mahabhagavat, they don't make the distinction. So that's why the Mahabhagavats, they may be able to preach the straight up, you know, nonsense and bring them around to Krishna consciousness. Because they don't make that distinction and they're unaffected by their position. So by that association, they can bring someone to their platform. Does that make sense? You know, so, but if someone's just saying, oh, I'm a Mahabhagavat, why would he say that? How many Mahabhagavats have you heard say, I'm a Mahabhagavat? You know, where in Gita Bhagavatam or Chaitanya Charitamrita or Nectar Devotion do we have an example of that? Does that make sense? What the heck? Again. From Monty Python. Yeah, like that. Because they make a distinction. Because the point is, let's say you have less time. Okay? And so, and you have something to get done. You will choose those situations or those aspects that can get done more quickly. Right? If you have 15 minutes, you don't take up a 2-hour job. You take up a 5, 10, 15 minute job. It'll get done. Does that make sense? So the point is since you have limited time, you're going to spend your time on how to help those living entities that actually you can do something for. Does that make sense? So therefore, those who are pious, you know, the four kinds of living entities that are mentioned by Krishna, those are the ones you focus on. The other four, then, you know, the amount of time it'll take, it's like, why bother? You know? You can say, oh, but they're also living entities. Yeah, but so are also all the crickets and the birds. When, you know, go out and do kirtan. You know, go to the zoo, do kirtan. Well, if you want animals, you don't have to go to the zoo. You just go downtown, right?
You know? You don't have to go to the zoo to go to the zoo.
Yeah, the whole thing is a zoo. Well, actually, a zoo would be where they're in a confined, controlled environment, regulated environment. So therefore, you'd have to say it's the jungle. So when you go downtown Manhattan, that's the jungle. Yeah.
Yeah, we don't want to insult the zoo animals.
Yeah, yeah. I mean, they'll appreciate the kirtan and they'll get the benefit, but yeah. Yeah, you don't want to say to insult them by saying that it's a zoo. Yeah. Yeah, so this making this distinction is only for the purpose to understand when you say this is the material world, what do we mean by it's the material world? You know, because we're not specifically meaning, oh, it's temporary or this or that. We're meaning that it's not connected to Krishna. But if someone's seeing it connected to Krishna or is connecting it to Krishna, then how is it material? So spiritual is connecting to Krishna. You know what I'm saying? So when people say, oh, we're devotees, we don't care for the rules. But the rules are given by Krishna. So if you can't see the rules connected to Krishna, that means you see them as material. And how do rules coming from Krishna are the material?
But we accept the material ones that somebody else made.
Yes, yes, exactly. And then we take that. Means you have, let's say, people who are sampradayic and who have tradition and culture, and they don't appreciate something, but we'll say, but they're on the bodily platform. But we take those who are opposed to the Vedic culture, and then... they come up with ideas, means they're just going to attack anybody. It doesn't matter who it is. But we're trying to placate them and please them, which is unpleasable. You know? And then we're going to adjust our lives and the rules and regulations for them. Who is these people? Name the people. Oh, no, we have to do this because we have to keep up with the modern and all this. Who are the people? Name the people. The faces. Even just the group. You know, we can say it's okay, you know, the Sampradaya, the four Sampradayas, and those people from pious Indian backgrounds who follow tradition. We can say, we can give, and we can even, if you want, we can give names if you really want. But here, there's no category, there's no names, it's just somehow or another, it's this universal, I guess you could say mode of ignorance is universal. Yeah, I guess if you could say it like that. Yeah? Yeah. So here is that this whole thing is that we're our business is how to connect it to Krishna and what to connect. We don't know what to connect, we don't know Krishna. So therefore we follow in the footsteps of those who do know Krishna. And what is recommended? Krishna says what he wants. The acharyas say how to do that. They give example. And so we follow that. So why follow someone else? No? Yeah. Okay. The goal of Dharma, which is undertaken faultlessly, with great effort, su anu stitasya, is ultimately to please the Lord. Using Dharma to gain swarga is most unsuitable. So if you use the material for your own benefit, it's unsuitable. You use it for pleasing Krishna. So it's the pleasing Krishna which is the important part. So those things that the acharyas have recommended, those things that... you want to close the window?
No.
No, it's all good. Okay. Notice the fans didn't go on today. It slowly, slowly goes down. We'll be wearing the rugs. Rug up, right?
Yeah.
If the result of Dharma consisting of pleasing the Lord is bhakti with taste for hearing, which brings about jnana and vairagya, which follow after the practice of bhakti, then it should be concluded that bhakti alone, consisting of hearing, etc., must be performed. Right? So the etc., hearing and chanting, that's the main. And then other things then follow that. Does that make sense? You're engaged in Krishna service. Just like, let's say, someone's come to hear the class. But as nowadays, then it's sometimes just due to, the time element. It's not as easy to just sit on that hard wooden floor like it used to be. You know, how was it, you know? Yeah. I was saying, it was quite easy kind of around the time of, Washington, up to Lincoln, like that. It was easy. After that, it got a little tough. So then, different arrangements will be made. Some people have, some benches or chairs, or they have special kinds of asanas that they sit on. Different things are there. And so by that, then they're able to hear the class. So it's about hearing the class, it's not about the asana. So whatever is the best for hearing the class, then that's there. So that if someone's using something like that, you can't say it's material because it's being used in Krishna's service. But if it's just for their pleasure, then you can say it's material. But if it's used for Krishna, then it's not material. Does that make sense? So all these things, any of the engagements are like that. Vicky, having concluded that performing devotional service is the supreme dharma, the process of executing devotional service is elaborated next. The process of hearing and chanting is specifically emphasized in the next anucheda. Right, so then of all activities, then you're supposed to perform dharma. Of dharma, then the highest is devotional service, because dharma means the nature of something, engaging it accordingly. So the nature of the soul is service to Krishna, and so that means anything connected with the body is secondary. Right? And so now that that's been established, and of that, then within that, then the aspects of hearing and chanting are prominent, and then the knowledge and detachment, those are secondary, supportive, along with other aspects of Dharma. And so now having established this now, then how it's being done, how you'll apply, because this is Bhakti Sandarbha, so it's about what is the process, right? But you have to establish that it should be done. Otherwise people say, well, why do I have to do this? So therefore we spend the first beginning establishing that.
It just struck me that, as you said, the inherent nature of the soul is that he's a devotee.
Yes.
And then naturally, anything that surrounds him should be used according to his inherent nature.
Yes.
So this is exactly what Varnashram is.
Yes.
Defines this. And there is no other system that defines this.
No, absolutely none. There isn't anything. Because even if you say, okay, what is the democratic way of engaging everybody in service? There isn't one. What's the despotic way? Even that's a little more clear. You know, Amy says this, there's no definite, what's the Christian way of engaging everybody and seeing that they're elevating? No.
Depends on which branch. They have the Methodists, which you'll have a little bit there. But
so they have some method.
Yeah, exactly.
So that's why they're the Methodists.
Right.
Muslims, they have Sharia, the rule is called the...
Okay, so some rule is there. Yeah, so then in the religion there'll be something. Also then if you look at the Old Testament, it means those who are more orthodox than they follow those rules and those who are not. But in general, there isn't, you know, especially in the Western world, of saying, oh no, but we have to, you know, modern and that. But what is? Anything goes. Like I just saw an ad yesterday, and it was just showing about, it just showed from the guy from the knees down to the feet. And it had, you know, it was an up-to-date, it's a latest ad. And it had, you know, some kind of, you know, special kind of sport shoe, running shoe, these kind of people wear, you know, with all the different colors and all the, you know, all the different shapes of the sole and everything like that. So you could see it was a nice one like that. And the guy was wearing pants. Well, you take it as a guy, it might not have been, but whatever it was. They were bell bottoms.
They were what?
Bell bottoms. So 50 years, they come back in fashion. You know. They were bell bottoms. So then, you know, what's the thing? You know, 10 years ago you wear bell bottoms, well maybe no more. They'd say it's stupid. Right? And you go back, and it was the latest thing. I think it was even the mods started the bell bottoms. They're an English group. They're all frizzy hair, like afros, and, you know, good looking clothes, but overly bright, overly emphasized. You know, it'd be like a less baggy zoot suit or something with frizzy hair. You know? Well, you know, so then. Then, you know, like that, and then the hippies picked that up, and this and that, but now it's coming back in fashion with sports shoes, not with, you know, work boots or moccasins or bare feet or, you know, sandals. I think we covered it, right? Yeah. And, so instead of, like you said before, you paint your toenails different colors, now you can, the shoes got different colors, so it's like it's done. So, this whole idea that there is a standard, what's the standard? There is none, because if you take the Western world, it's based off of the Christian. It's not based off of anything else. You may have others within it, but it's not based off of them. The first world is based off of Christianity and of that specifically, Protestant. Like that. Catholic is there, but is considered a little bit, you know, regressive. And the Protestant has the possibility of complete modernization. But having said that, what is Protestant? What is Christian clothes? Christian food? Christian schedule in a day? You know, Christian lifestyle? Or interaction with family. There's nothing. They'll have a few points here and there that change every now and again. You know, whatever today is the thing to do, then, you know, after a few years, it'll find out that it'll kill you. Right? That's the way it is. Because if you take too much of anything, it'll kill you. Literally.
Did the term Protestant come from the fact that they were protesting? Tradition?
Yes, it's Protestant. Is the Protestant means Protestant, but just in pronunciation it comes out Protestant.
But is it specifically the tradition that they protested? Or?
They were protesting the Catholics, the ritualistic. Yes.
Maharaj, one explanation is it's a pro, it's a Latin word, and pro testament.
Pro-Testament.
Oh, so they based on the New Testament.
Pro-Testament. The Catholics are also pro-Testament.
No, because in Catholics, the Bible was in Latin. It was closed for usual people. But Luther, he translated it for German, and then just for
For common people.
It was open for all, and they called it. We don't need a church between us and God. We don't need...
Oh, good. So that means we don't need that Lutheran church that's there in the square that the government then said that the state is Lutheran. So we don't need that church. We don't need that hierarchy. We don't need their rules. We don't need their education, right? Excellent. You know, we don't need any of that. It means if that's the thing, then everyone should just, as they're walking, I say. Then the thing is they don't catch that that's actually the Jewish thing, right? As you, what is it? As you walk us by the way, as you sit us down, as you stand us up, whatever, you know, you remember God. So you can pray anywhere, do anything anywhere. But the point is do they emphasize how you must pray or how much you should pray or how to see that you do pray? So then they throw out a regulative system with no regulation, and but there's nothing to make them pray. But at the same time, as they create their own establishment, their own rituals, where did these rituals come from? You know, Lutheran rituals, where did they come from? They're not Jewish, they're not Catholic, they're not Orthodox. They're new, so they made them up. You know, it just felt good. Somehow or another, wine always stays in the rituals like that. Seems to be, you know, very much appreciated. You know, it's just a matter of whether you wash the cup there in front of everybody because you forgot to do it before the ceremony, so then you do it ritualistically there. The time instead of afterwards, you take it, wash it, and put it nicely on the shelf. They just drink it and just put it down, and they come back, oh, I forgot. So he brings out the water and does the whole thing, and that. And then everyone thinks, okay, wash the cup, you know, like that. So where did it come from? And then the hierarchy, and where do you get, you know, where do the cardinals, this, the bishops, the that, archbishops, archdukes, the you know, whatever it is that, you know, oh, it's got so many names, you know, depending how big it is and how tall it is and how this it is and that makes a difference. So depending on the size of the church, it actually has a meaning, you know, like that. So if that's there, why does it have a meaning? Because you don't need a church. You can just pray out in the field. You know, you don't need anyone. That means we don't need them either. So it's like the, you know, it's like the Mayavadi saying that all words are illusions, so that they're talking. But according to their philosophy, they shouldn't talk because it's all illusion, whatever they're going to say. So these difficulties come up. Okay, so they're pro-Testament. But at the same time, it's not that the others are anti-Testament, just that they have a limitation on who gets to use it. No? So this probably has both, that is pro-Testament and protesting, or they're protesting the lack of pro-Testament. So then at the bottom line, it just comes out of, at least according to the Catholics, then they call them prodies. At least the Irish do. Yes?
Because they don't have the tradition, they have one good quality. Usually when we have interfaith dialogue, they're more open to Krishna consciousness.
Yes, that'll be an advantage. That'll be, means Krishna, anything there, but that's the only advantage. You know what I'm saying? Is that they're open to Krishna consciousness, in other words, the philosophy. And because they have no lifestyle, they don't mind adjusting to something else. But because they don't have a lifestyle, then the weakness will be is they can't see the eternal tradition that is there in the Vedic culture. Because they have no tradition, they protested against the tradition. And so they can't accept tradition. So you see that's going to be the biggest difficulty. Those from the Protestant backgrounds, they're the ones that fight against Varnashram. Not people from, you know, Judaic backgrounds or other, let's not say Judaic, let's say more Orthodox backgrounds. So if they were more serious about their religious practices, that they had a regulation in their life, how they did things and all that, how they dressed, how they dealt, they wouldn't have so much of a problem. Or those who grew up in a cultural environment where culture was very important, and it didn't matter, it means culture was important, not their culture. you know, the principle of culture, whatever it was, it was respected, they'll have less problems. But it's not necessarily that there's something to follow, it's just they appreciate it. You know what I'm saying? So, like you see, is in India, Varnashram is not the difficult. The guy moves into the temple, he's at Mangalarti doing this and that, wearing, doing everything he does, that's easy for him. The philosophy is the problem. You know, that there's no demigod worship and I'm not going to get any benefit from this. You know, I'm a devotee, I've been here 3 years, why aren't I in charge? Where's my office? Where's my facilities? You know, where's the, you know, I say, heaven on earth, goodwill to me. You know, so they'll have that problem. But the other regulation, this and that, no. I see the Westerners, they take the philosophy, you know, hook, line, and sinker. They're totally into it. But the culture, forget it. You know, 2-3 years, yeah, you can do it, you know, be that rah-rah like that. But after that, you got to get real and, you know, get down to, you know, your actual life and you and who you are and be true to yourself and all that things, even though the self is not actually the body or mind or things. Because when they say we're Westerners, that means we're saying we're the body. And if you're saying, okay, you're Westerners, but what does Western mean? That's the problem. What does Western mean? What's a Western lifestyle? I can quote celebrities who get up at 2 a.m. because they know it's better for their health and their mind and everything. They go to bed at 8, get up at 2. You know, and that's Western. And they'll talk about it. People go, yeah, this is good. You know, the SEALs do that also. The Navy SEALs, they get up at 4. You know, and that's, you know, that's kind of latest. They get up earlier, but 4 pukka, they're up. Any of the special folks, they all do it. You know what I'm saying? People who are, you know, are not so much in the party but practical, they'll get up early. You know, you're in the villages, farmers who get up early. It means you even have a saying, early to bed, early to rise makes a man healthy, wealthy, and wise. You know? And so it's just there, so that's part of Vedic culture. So then why people don't get up? Oh, we're not fanatic. But that's it's also accepted. It was accepted when the Western culture in general was more cultured and more prosperous, and it was, that's what they did. You know, so the difficulty will come up there is that people will say these things, but what is Western? What is Western dress? Because most of the Western dress that those say, you say we're Westerners, we don't have to wear this Indian clothes, but they wear, they look like Slavs. I mean literally Slavs. Slavs. Now, if they want to say, we as Americans, we're Slavs, you know, we're born and bred, we're Slavs through and through, okay. And it's those few weirdo guys that kind of identify culturally more with Europe, then they dress a little better and stuff like that. Then, okay, but then say that. Don't say it's all equal, don't say it's all, you know, just it's all one. In fact, don't say that, well, what we're doing is more natural, it's better. But is it natural? Natural for what? What species of life? You know what I'm saying? And that's the problem. There will be some species that generally doesn't walk around on two legs. Even if it does, then, you know. You know, chimps are known, they're smart. You know? So it becomes down to the point, if you get it down to logic, what is this culture they're talking? We're Westerners, we follow Westerners. What is this culture? What is it? I mean, even Mahatma Gandhi, that favorite, they say, oh, you went to the West, so you saw. So what did you think of Western culture? And Mahatma Gandhi responded, that would be a good idea. It would be a good idea if they had some culture, but they don't. There is no culture. Means it's just this mishmash of everything. You've got 8 million, you know, 300,000 species of life out there. I'm leaving off the 100 that are following Vedic culture and that are civilized, and they just do whatever they like. Whatever, you know, it doesn't matter. As long as you don't bother someone else, no one minds. So there is no culture. So this idea. So if they just want to say, I don't want to be regulated, I can't tolerate being regulated or told what to do. I can't tolerate authority. I want to do whatever I want to do, when I want to do it, how I want to do it. You know? I say when, I say what, I say why. You know? Then just say that. And then those who have that mentality will say, okay, well, I have that mentality. How can we do it? Well, you just chant, and you don't have to follow any rules. You just, whenever you feel like it, you chant, and this and that, and, you know, and like that. It's just whatever you feel like, and do that. No? Then you're good. Then say that. But don't say as what we're doing like that is on the same level as someone on the Mudgeon platform. No, just say we're a beginning grade neophyte devotee, and we're attached to that position, and because of that we can't actually get up to the standard of really associating nicely with devotees or Bhajana Kriya especially and Anartha Nivriti. Forget that. You know, whatever by the grace of the holy name comes whenever we do chant, then naturally there'll be some purification. But as far as removing the attachments to the material platform that we think are going to are going to bring us to the Madhyama platform, the platform of Nishtha, forget that. We can't get there. We have no option. No, but we're going to say, oh, it's just feeling and sentiment like the Protestants. We feel we don't need all this regulation, but then we don't need your regulation that you say you can't do this. You can't do it? Okay, don't do it. But why do you impose it on others? Why do you impose it on others? So then that's envy. It's not an elevated perspective. It's just straight up front envy. Envy of authority, envy of tradition. And basically it comes down to whatever lifestyle I've lived, that's what I'll do. Because otherwise you have Brazilians saying we're Westerners. Since when is Brazil is part of the first world? Since when? By certain people in the field of economics and politics say it will be one of the first worlds, and all the ones that are first world now will go disappear. Was that BRIC? You know, you're going to have, I think that's Brazil, Russia, India,
China,
and Kazakhstan, I think. I think the K is Kazakhstan, unless it's Korea. But whatever, those will be the problem, because they have all the resources in the world. So naturally they'll come up. But right now they're not. But then these people are walking around in their flip-flops and their shorts and their t-shirts and saying we're Westerners. The whole South American continent is more east of the easternmost part of North America. So they're east, they're not Westerners. How do you define Westerner? I mean, by the Vedas, then actual Westerners are the Orient. Anything farther east of India, of Bengal, that's West. So real Westerners are the Orient. So the Chinese, you know, Vietnamese, Thai, they're actual Westerners. And then what you call North and South America, those would be Midwesterners. And go ahead and tell that to one of these guys, that they're a Midwesterner. They will freak. Because especially if you're a West Coast Walla or an East Coast Walla, to be called Midwest Walla, that's like insulting. You know? So, you know, Europe then would be, I guess, Middle East. Middle East would be East, and India would be Far East. So, yeah, these things are weird. So we have to appreciate that they'll say all these different things, but their philosophy doesn't hold up. So say, oh, we want the test. That's a nice thing, that they want everybody to have access, that you don't have the smartest controlling everything and regulating everything and making that you have to go through them, you know. Like that, it's supposed to be, was it Jesus, supposed to be the way, the light, and the truth, not them. They're representing But everybody has that access, and you take advantage. So it should be they all have the book, they can all read it, they can approach it, but they should be hearing from those who have dedicated their life to it full time, and to hear, give ideas and directions. So why can't they use both? Why is it that it's only, you know, the priest, or it's only the common person? Why can't both of them work together? So that's the weakness of these systems, is that it's all this or all that. Yes?
You just talk about it, like it's similar to prefix somehow.
Yeah. It's also envy. They don't like that, you know, I work so hard, I make these devotees, they're my devotees, why someone else should come along and he's the guru and then he calls the shots. Mm-hmm. But the point is they shouldn't be managing the temples, but the other ones should understand the thing. So they don't want no, we shouldn't see any guru worship, we shouldn't see this or that. So they're just envious. You can say whatever you want. No, they've done wrong, but two wrongs don't make a right. Getting rid of worship of Vaishnavas is in no way, shape or form, even on the most neophyte level of Vaishnav. It's an atheistic position. You know, completely. There is no validity there on that platform. If you're saying, okay, senior devotees in the name of, you know, being gurus and like this and that are dealing in ways that they shouldn't, but now the same people that kicked them out in 86, now they as TBC, now they're saying they're absolute. So they're taking a harder line what were they called? This? Zonal Acharyas. They're taking a harder line than that, because you could come up to the heaviest one of that and say, this is wrong. They'll argue a bit, but if you make good points, they'll stop. I've seen it. But this group, no. They hide behind their offices, their walls, their doors. Like that, you can't see them. And then they put out these manifestos. So they're worse. They're way worse. So therefore, then what was it from? Was it for a respective authority? Like I mentioned, one of the architects of the whole 50-man committee, he told me that one of the biggest mistakes of that was it destroyed respective authority in ISKCON. And that was one of the architects. So he had at least a brain to do that. He didn't have the brain to see what would happen. That's why then the scriptures give their direction.
You mean they destroy when?
Because if you pull down the gurus and they're just ordinary bozos and we don't worship and all this is nonsense, then if you don't care for your guru, why the heck would you care about a temple president or a GBC or anybody else? A province disciple? It's like, who cares? So they destroyed it. It did. And then they, you know, it doesn't work. Then you bring in the corporate to try to become professional. Because before, devotees were professional spiritualists. Things got done because of that spiritual dedication. Now you remove that. So now you have to get it done by so-called material professional. But, you know, it's going to be, you know, equal outcome and all this and that. So therefore, it's not professional and you get nothing done. You know? And then, because now you can't get anything done and nobody cares, then you have to present yourself as an absolute authority.
Yeah.
Which Prabhupada already said. Prabhupada said, Tamal Krishna Maharaj as the GBC is not the absolute anything, then that means, if you've already said the 100 rupees is not, has any meaning, that already includes the, you know, I mean, yeah, 10 rupees, you might put it more in paisa, but whatever it is. Yeah, you know, just depends on how far you want to take it. So then, where does this come from? So it's just based on envy. You can say, no, but this is offensive and that. Why are we in the material world? We're here because of envy and attachment. We want to be the controller and enjoyer. It's the found. So unless you're looking at it and following the footsteps of the acharyas, how are you going to get over this? So in other words, if you don't follow what Prabhupada said and follow the tradition, you are going to fall into that trap. That's why we can with such conviction say it's envy or it's attachment. Because that's the basis. Bhaktivinoda, of course, says all philosophies, all religions fall into two categories in the material world. Karma and jnana. and you can have any, you know, blend of that that you like. You know, so it's just, that's what it is. So we have to look at it, that these things have to be seen in there. That's why tradition is there. Tradition is what works. So tradition is what the Shastras say what Prabhupada gave. Then we make something. That becomes a tradition. That's more important than what the Shastra says. You know, that's our practice. And if it's in line with, then it's used. And if it creates some regularity, it creates some regulation, you know, some something that'll bring you so that less material, you know, more the jnana aspect, more detachment, and that, so that more knowledge and these things can come up, then it's useful. But at some point, if it's not, because if it comes from us, at some point it's going to become less useful. So at that time, you know, it's like the devotees used to go out and go into their graveyards and take the flowers, you know, and bring them back for decorating the temple. So in the beginning it has meaning, because they don't know of standards of cleanliness and this and that. They just see us, here's a bunch of flowers. Like, the dead guy couldn't care less. And everybody else came for the program and left. No, they're not going to come back. You know, and anyway, the guy's going to clean them up later in the day anyway, so you get them in the morning when they're still a little fresh, and then we use them for the deities. So what they don't understand is, no, they've been offered to dead people, so we don't use them. So once that comes along and you understand the higher levels of purity and that, then you don't use them. But in the beginning, it was a nice sentiment. You know, I mean, they went through a lot of endeavor to, you know, drive down there, go to the back of the cemetery, climb over the brick wall. They're always brick walls, you know, some kind of, you know. And, you know, it's something like that. Unless in Europe, then it's only a little 3 foot high, so you can see everything. But somehow or another, I don't know, West, they seem to be, at least America, they're always tall walls. So you climb over that. Probably that way it keeps the hobos from living in there.
You don't want to upset people by reminding them about that.
Yeah. So, yes. And so then you go into that. So it was a lot of endeavor. You know, and there was about Krishna's, for Krishna's, so in that way it becomes perfect. But then there are more developments, and then you give that up. So it's the first step, it was good. Then you go to the next step, then you go to the next step. Like that, and so like that you go.
I think what Manji mentioned about Sharia, it has something to do with it, because most people, they connect all these traditional systems of tradition. They connect with fanaticism or oppression. Or, you know, Sharia is well known in Western world.
And that's how it's presented. But you also find, I think Govind Maharaj was telling me, he was talking with, I can't remember where it was, maybe Uzbekistan, right? One of the stans down there that's not influenced by the Taliban. And he was talking with, you know, I think he was the, you know, it was a well-respected mullah in the place. And speaking very nicely in the philosophy, not doesn't have that fanatical element at all. And so you'll find that in all traditions. You have those people that have, it's more about the devotion, more about the expression like that. They don't have that fanatic. But people that's all they have is that fanatic. That's their identity, I'm fanatic. You know, you look at me funny, I cut off your head, so I'm a good Muslim, you know, like that. It's kind of like, well, where does that come from? You know, so that's not the spirit of what's given there. You know? So when you take that, then they become too ritualistic, and then even that, they just become more aggressive. So they don't, it's not necessarily that they themselves are following all the nice things very nicely. Like, how much are they giving in charity? You know, these really, really heavy, militant guy. How much are they giving in charity? You're supposed to do that every day, give in charity. Where are they giving in charity? I mean, you can't call a grenade, pull the pin out, and throw it at somebody, and that's your charity. You know, you can't call that charity. So the whole thing is they get into a particular mindset, but then they become envious of other living entities. So how is that pleasing to God? You know, you have to, it means It means their bad association, avoid their association. So that's the thing, is you're always going to have fanatics. But, you know, America the Beautiful, right? The guys came over there, and basically speaking, except for those who surrendered and were willing to move on to small little locations in America, there was genocide, and they wiped out all the local indigenous people. So that's, you know, in the name of, you know, freedom and this and that, and you know, so I'm saying, you know, what is there? And then the rat race, that's not exploitation. You know, you let the market be as free as it likes, and they'll squeeze everything out of everybody. You know, so how is that? You know, that's the thing, is that as long as intellectuals can be exploitative, governments can be exploitative, but the common person and the business people can't be. The economics. So then who's running it? You can see. So otherwise, why aren't they seeing the faults in the economic system? You know? Or the mass. The mass goes out because, you know, it's about the black people, and you know, they've been enslaved. But how does going down the main street of the city and going in and burning all the shops, of course you're going to steal everything that's in there. They're only burning the empty shop. They're not burning the shop full of Louis Vuitton bags. They go take them all out carefully first and then burn the place. How is that progressive? How is that actually making people more, you know, that yes, blacks are great people. Why am I looking at them differently? Instead of, why are they going down and burning down my shop? You know, so it's like, oh, this happened before, but yeah, come. But then if we do that, you know, the whites came over, they killed the Indians, therefore, according to that, all whites can be killed. Even if they support the Black Lives Matter movement, they killed the Red Indians. You know, so I mean, so where does it end? So it's so impersonal, it doesn't deal with individuals.
Now you have black people marching with white life matters.
It'll just go to the point where nobody's life matters. They should just go down the street with a nice t-shirt, right, big on it, "My life matters." You know? That's the acronym. My life matters. Yeah.
It's one famous picture now. One person still on his knees near the washing machine and putting clothes inside and saying, please forgive me for separating white and black.
Oh my God. white and black.
Segregation,
yeah. I should wash them all together. Yeah, white, black, but also colored, you know. But you know what's interesting? In SA, South Africa, they had very, you know, apartheid. You had whites, then you had Indians, then you had blacks, then you had colored. So whites ran everything. The Indians then were, you know, all the guys that would, you know, how you say, the managers and do everything like that. Then the blacks, then they were more your, you know, who was your, the workers and like that. Colored, which meant they were mixed of white and black. Nobody liked them. The blacks don't like them. You know, the whites didn't like them. So this whole thing is, you know, if you're colored, then nobody likes you. Yeah, so it's just, it gets down there. So if they're so accommodating, why aren't they accommodating them? No, they don't like.
But even nowadays, when you're in New York, for example, like, you don't see many couples, like white and black, white men and black girls. Very rarely you see those.
It was a big thing, I think, in the 80s or 70s that were into it at some point. But it would always be a black guy and a white lady. Most of the time. Occasionally be the other way around. Yeah, you don't see as much now, because everyone gets into their own area.
Yeah.
You know.
Even as friends, see friends hanging out, they're usually the same color.
Yeah. Well, that's the thing, is in the name of broadening, actually they just make it more and more into small little groups. So that's the fun part, is it's the mode of ignorance that always goes opposite of what you think it is.
So every city is divided. You have your Chinatown, you got your Germantown, you got your Polish. In other words, the city wants to, broaden its horizons and become a melting pot, but then everyone goes there, but then each group stays to the, generally, it's not always, but generally speaking, they all have their area.
Yeah,
and every city's like that. It's not like it's unique to New York or Philadelphia. It's like every city's got a Chinatown.
Yeah, it's just like if you want good Chinese food, you don't go to Harlem.
No. You get Spanish food in Harlem.
Hmm?
You get Spanish food.
If you go more north, north.
Okay, yeah.
That's Spanish Harlem.
So it's just
they go there because you get your stuff, you have your people, you can talk your language. You know.
And you waste up all Indians.
Yeah.
It's an Indian ghetto.
So it's just this. Because always before it would be like that, New York, especially in New York, you have these areas. And they get to, I can't say, but I remember hearing that the first group that came over, there'd be a wave of somebody. They were there, they went in, as you know, it's like they say, the ghetto, like that kind of thing. Then they grow up and they, with time, get it together. They move out and move into the middle class society or above. Then another wave comes in, and then they take over the place. And then it just keeps going through those. Because it's wherever things are cheapest, it's where the people that have no money will go. And as they, with time, because especially if they're from older cultures, they know how to save money and all that, then they move on from that. They're not still there. You're going to say? That's it? No? Okay, good. Okay. Yeah, so that comes, that all that, how you say, derivative conversation comes from not seeing Dharma in relationship with Krishna consciousness, then that's where it becomes material. Then you're going to have what people say is Dharma, and then you're going to have the whole range that's there.
I think what's most bewildering is the people that are speaking on this lower level of Gaudiya tradition and all that, they actually see themselves on a higher level. It's almost like they think they're on the wrong platform.
Where the rules don't apply. But at the same time, they make rules that everybody else should follow. They have standards everybody else should follow.
Yeah, so it's a mix of, Sahajism mixed with the crab mentality. I don't know if you know the phenomenon, but when there are a bunch of crabs in a, they've been caught by fishermen, and one tries to climb out, it's almost out, another one will grab it and pull it back in.
Oh, really? Crap.
I don't know if it's trying to, also climb out or whatever, but that's what they do, so none of them ever escape. But
okay, so you can leave it in an open bucket and they won't get out.
From what I've heard, anyway.
Yeah.
But, so it's a mix of them thinking they're the top, but also them being envious of anybody else is making any progress.
Yeah, that's the thing. So I've heard about that. If someone was telling me, and I can't remember what it was. I think it was an article maybe on, may have been on Soweto. I think it's like the biggest slum in SA, maybe even in the world, but it was there. And one of the things, and I think it was somebody had done a study on them, is that if you get by, just get by, so you're not dying and like that, then you're part of the scene. But as soon as you start to get a little bit more affluent and all that, everyone else will bring you down. You can't. I mean, so if you're below, depending upon if you're nice and people like you, they'll help you out. But if you go above, then they'll bring you down. So that element of envy is that, you know, it's like we were saying before, the original thing is, you know, I'm the temple president, and how come, you know, and I'm working, how come he has more say than me? You know, I made him a devotee, I should be. So basically you see in the Ritvik, the temple president becomes the one initiating people. Mm. You know, they'll say Prabhupada's the guru, but, you know, it's in parampara, the temple president's the guru, he's the dikshaguru. You know, if you understand anything about how the Pancharatric system works, then he's the guru. So that's the thing, they're happy to do that and they control everything. So it'll be envy. You know. Yes.
You talked about our Vaishnava culture, and I have a question on this point. Many years ago, when I presented Krishna consciousness in an interfaith meeting, our leader told me we shouldn't wear Vaishnava clothes because we should not irritate the leader.
We should not irritate them, even though they're Christians, they show up as Christians, the Muslims show up as Muslims,
yes,
and everything like that, but we shouldn't show up because we'll agitate.
And the leaders, Muslims, leaders, and Christian leaders, they asked me, why didn't you wear it?
Yeah, of course. They expect you. You go to an interfaith, you want to see, like you go to a program where the Dalai Lama comes, you want to see him in his Buddhist outfit.
They're already open to it. If you're going to an interfaith conference,
yes,
it means they're already open to the fact that
yes,
there's other cultures.
Yeah,
and you're
they're already open.
Uncomfortable.
Yeah, no, it's beyond stupid. Stupid, you could understand. This is beyond stupid. It has zero meaning, zero understanding. Like you said, interfaith means they're already open to it. I've never heard of an interfaith program where like nuns come that they don't come in their habit. Always. With their head covered, you know, which is like you can't do it in the West, right? No one does it. If you did it, you know, lightning would strike you. But, you know, those kind of Christian, they walk around like that. Muslims walk around like that. I mean, it's even in the year, can't do it. There's people in the American government that you know, the cloth you wear like this, you know, around your face, what do you call it? Okay, but whatever. They're wearing it right there. Right in the Senate, right in, you know, the news, right when they do that, don't matter where they go, they're wearing it. And these are people who are, you know, have official positions in the American government. You know, big people are doing things. And so they wear like that. That's the fun part, is we can't wear like that. Muslims will wear like that. You know, others are wear like that. Buddhists, what's the thing? What's this thing? We don't want to disturb them. So who's the ignorant one here?
It's like going to a sports game, but you don't want to wear the jersey of the team you support because you don't want to make anybody else feel uncomfortable.
Yeah, yeah, that would be the thing. Because if you wear the jersey of supporting your team, then the other team will get upset, and so then, so if you really want to please them, why not wear what they're wearing? You know, so it's an interfaith. So everybody, the country is Muslim. So everybody will wear a Muslim outfit, or if you're a Christian, everyone, if you're a Buddhist, everyone wears that. You know, so when you have an interfaith in Thailand, everybody shows up in a Buddhist outfit.
Or you have to wear all of them. You have to have the yarmulke.
Oh yeah, yeah. You can work out a thing, and then different people will come up with different interesting combinations. Like they have the collar but not the cross, or someone else has the cross not the collar. Yeah, you could mix it up like that, you know. Or instead of the cross, you could have one of, you've ever seen those big dollar signs that are encrusted with diamonds with a huge chain, you know, because you know, dollar is God, right? You know.
Maharaj, now after many years, I see they continue to present Krishna consciousness in the meditation process, and I want to ask you, should I try to help you?
I would just say, as if they'll leave you alone, you go as you are, and then the people will be happy with you and they'll talk with you. Then the devotees will see that who wants to talk to them. They don't even have faith enough to wear their own outfit. Who wants to talk to a person who's coming to an interfaith outfit and they won't wear their own clothes? That means they don't have the faith. They're embarrassed. Most of these things that don't do Harinam, don't do, is because they're embarrassed. Varnashram, oh, because I was on the airplane, oh, you guys are like that, oh, Varnashram, oh, that caste system in India, they had this, and they have no answer. So they feel so embarrassed, and they go back and say, oh, you know, we should get rid of this, it's bad for our movement. Because they always talk about the reputation of the movement. No, it's not. It's about them. It's not about the reputation of the movement. They'll use that because they can't say that. Just like we said, that we're Westerners. They can't say, I'm attached. I grew up in an environment with no other culture than what I was not exposed to anything else. I don't know anything else. I feel real uncomfortable because I have zero cultural capital. And so therefore, I only feel comfortable wearing what I would wear. You know, but what they forget is what you wear might work in your social circle, in your local area, but it doesn't work anywhere else. Like I remember seeing videos, you know, sometimes you see these ones that, you know, it's an American guy that lives in another country, like Europe. And he's telling Americans what not to do in Europe. He says if you want to be accepted by people, is that you're, a cultured person, don't do these. And sometimes it's 10 items, sometimes it's 15 items.
Just be one, don't be American.
Yeah, just be cultured, don't be. But I mean, it's like, no flip-flops. Don't wear flip-flops. No one wears flip-flops. They only wear them in the shower or down at the beach. No one wears them in the street. Don't wear, baggy t-shirts. Don't wear cargo shorts. Don't wear baseball hats. Sorry?
Pajama bottoms.
Yeah, pajama bottoms. Don't do these things. But those ones that say we're Westerners, that's what they wear. And then they think it's universal. They're the universal religion. The Unitarians. You know? Well, no. It works in certain parts of America. I think even it doesn't work everywhere, but if you wear it in certain areas, in like probably Southern California, maybe parts of Arizona, like that, you could get away with it. Because it's hot there and nobody cares. But if they're going to anything formal, they don't wear like that. Just wandering around, if they wander around, no one would bother you. You know? But don't think you can wear it somewhere else. So the whole thing is we have our culture, and that's part of the thing. People go for the culture. You know, it's just like you can imagine, you went, you know, paid money for tickets to, you know, the, what do you call it, the, you know, one of these Scottish marching bands, you know? And then when they come out, they got the drums and that, but they're all in flip-flops and shorts and t-shirts and baseball hats, you know, different colors, no kilts, you know, no shoes with the socks with the little thing on the side that has a little, you know, little tassel and all that, and you know, the fara hat with the thing on it, and no, they just come out looking like, you know, the kids that you grew up with. Would you go again? No. You know?
This is a funny example. They have these Roman soldiers marching on the streets of Rome. Like, regularly they have this parade with their uniform and swords. And so imagine this is done without the...
Romans.
You know, like they have this funny, you know...
You expect it. Or if you go to England and the guy standing in front of Buckingham Palace is there in his you know, shorts and the flip-flops, you know, one of the beef eaters, it's like, you know, you'd be very disappointed. You know, and he's got a slingshot in his back pocket. You know, and he's not standing, he's just hanging out, you know. He won't talk to you, won't look at you, but, you know.
You want your money back?
Yeah, you definitely want your money back. It's just like, well, what are they talking about? You know, culture, you go to a Japanese restaurant, but it's all, it looks like a normal diner or something. You know, no, you expect to see it looking, you know, there should be some Japanese elements to it. Or if you go to a Thai restaurant, you have a few Thai things and Thai food, but, you know. That's the thing. Culture is called people respect. So if people can't handle that, then they should just say, I'm uncultured. I am xenophobic. I can't handle culture other than what I grew up in. I feel uncomfortable. That's all. Just say that. Then we can say, okay, then just whatever you are comfortable wearing, it doesn't matter. As Jiva Goswami is saying, just wear that and try to, you know, do what the best you can to be Krishna conscious. But it's called a beginning phase because of envy and attachment. Don't call it that this is, it's all equal, it's the same as somebody following tradition. You can say, oh, but we have devotion. What if the person following tradition has devotion? But don't take it, I have devotion, but that guy, he may be smarter, so it's, I'm better. Yeah, but what if the person is following tradition and has devotion?
So the lowest is presented as the highest.
The lowest is presented as the highest. And that is universal. When it's not. I remember devotees in France freaked out when a senior devotee showed up exactly what I'm talking about. Shorts, maybe a polo shirt, and flip-flops or sandals. And they're expecting to come in to the temple, attend the program, give the class like that. They said, no, we're in France. We don't do that. You dress up when you go to church. Everybody dresses up when they go to church. Maybe Southern California, they have some branches where they all walk in their t-shirts and stuff like that. You know, he's the cool priest. You know, like that. But otherwise, everywhere else, you go to church, it's called Sunday best. Not your Sunday hanging around the house, you know. What do you call that? When you're slumming it. Yeah, so it's like, you know, it's Sunday, so we're slumming it, so just come as you are.
Today's laundry day.
Yeah, today's laundry day. Yeah, so everything's so in
that. The worst, you know, your torn up t-shirt. And
yeah, like that. So it's laundry day. Yeah, so. But this doesn't fly. No, what gentleman's going to buy this? It seems, oh, it's cool, it's unique, it's different, but no gentleman will buy it. You know, just as you say, oh, but in Southern California people go to church like this, but you find plenty of other places, majority of places, and probably at least 98%, they go dressed nicely. They put on good clothes, dressed nicely, you know, like that.
It's like you were mentioning the other day that if you take into account that we're talking about the reflection, if they're identifying with the reflection, then yes, they are on a higher platform because they're further away.
Farther away, okay, yeah, yeah.
So yeah, in that sense, yes. We're on a higher platform.
Yeah, so that means the guys in Patala are the highest. Yeah. Yeah. So the point is that yes, whatever it is, you connect it to Krishna, but the point is, since it's about Krishna's pleasure, why wouldn't we be trying to develop it? If since it's about Krishna, why wouldn't we want to dress to please Krishna? Eat to please Krishna? Why wouldn't we want to be doing that? You know? And if there is some, then you say, okay, it's here because of an attachment or my position, or this is all the more advanced I am, and then that's fine. That's fine. Be honest. Don't try to present it that I'm attached to this, and but at the same time I want the same prestige as I should be afforded the same prestige as someone else who's more serious. And but I want the same prestige. It's kind of like, why? Based on what? Where's the strength? Oh, it's all in the heart, like that. Yeah. But then if that's the case, I'll bring in some sahajiyas. At least they'll wear a dhoti. And do Harinam and chant Japa. At least they'll do that. Wear Jilak also. You know, it's just, I mean, if you look at them, you think that they're Vaishnavas. But it's just about the feeling and all that. Because we want that. We already got them here. You know what I'm saying? We grew up with them. So what's so special about them? Maybe they're special in the West. But it's kind of like, huh? Who cares? You grew up with the Smartas. You grew up with the Sahajis. You grew up with the Mayavadis. It's kind of like, so, you know, so... up with them. In Krishna consciousness.
Yes.
Om Hare Krishna, Krishna Krishna, Hare Hare, Hare Rama, Hare Rama, Rama Rama, Hare Hare.